Alrighty, everybody, welcome back to another amazing episode of The Weeb Weekly. We are back at it again with a ton of material that we have to cover. But first of all, before we get into all of the beautiful craziness that happened in the world of pop culture, let's say hello to our beautiful, beautiful hosts. Travis, Mizu, how are you doing? Say hello to the squad. If you're watching or listening to us, tell the people how you're feeling.
Yo, I'm feeling amazing, man. Always great to talk to you, lads. I love you guys.
Hey, me too. Love you too. What's up, Mizu? How you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm feeling in the spirit. A lot of stuff has happened.
Yes, sir. Spooky season is finally over. It is time for Mariah Carey and a lot to catch up on when it comes to pop culture. Before we get into all the craziness, we're going to let you know. There's a lot of places where you can find us. So if you're watching us, you're watching us probably on the YouTube. If you're listening, you're listening on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever else you consume your podcasts. With that being said, you can find our social media platforms in very different spots. So for example, for me, you can search up at I'm Tropical Joe on TikTok, on Instagram, or wherever else you get your content, including YouTube, to see my stuff. Travis, where can the people find you?
I am Travis the Sibling Guys on TikTok and Instagram, and Travis the Sib on Twitter, if you want to follow me on Twitter.
Love that. How about you, Mizu?
You guys can find me as Mizu Shogun on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, and Mizu Shogun as well on Twitter.
All righty. Now that you have that settled, we're going to give you a little bit of a breakdown of what we're going to talk about today. So first off, we are going to be talking about the most important anime that are out in the business right now. Chainsaw Man, My Hero Academia, Spy Family, Blue Lock, all that sort of goodness. After that, we're going to talk about probably the biggest movie on the side of Marvel in this entire year, which is Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. The first people have seen it. We're going to talk about their reviews and what we are expecting from the film. And then obviously, we have a lot of news surrounding our main man, Superman, Henry Cavill, as he's come back into what some people say is his most iconic role. I would debate that it's The Witcher, but we're going to get to that at some point because obviously that's a lot of controversy. And then we're going to end the podcast talking about probably one of the most controversial top five rankings that we've had in this show, which is our top five fictional characters. Are you guys ready for that?
Yeah.
You think so?
I'm scared for this list, man. I'm scared for this list, but
it makes a ton of sense. Like it's scary. It's scary to put that top five. But you know what else is scary? Missing out on the changes to your fantasy basketball team, which is exactly what I did this week. I struggled. I didn't put the people that were supposed to be playing, and I put people on my injury list that were not supposed to be there. But don't be like me. Obviously, when you're playing fantasy basketball, you have to be at the top of your game. And obviously, since basketball is back, Bet Online remains your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season. You'll find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at Bet Online. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Pretty saucy, if you ask me. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports and events, whether that's the NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. So you can head to betonline.ag to join and receive a 50% welcome bonus to your first deposit. So you make sure that you use code BELIEVE, BLEAV, to receive your rewards. Bet online, that is where the game starts. With that being said, gentlemen, we had a ton of stuff happening in the world of anime, starting with Chainsaw Man. Now, I know, Travis, I know you're waiting for the show to pick up. It is picking up. It's only been two episodes, but it is already like up there, I would say. Right, Mizu?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, we got four episodes out, and wow, I love it already. It's building up to what I expected as a manga reader.
I totally agree. I haven't finished the manga. I am 9 volumes in. I believe there are 11. I'm missing a couple of them. But essentially, the manga is probably one of the most visceral and hardcore anime manga reads that I've had in a while. Obviously, it's what got me back into collecting manga. So I have like a special relationship with this now. And so far, the anime has been pretty faithful. And I think the biggest thing that they've done is managed to keep the level of intrigue up while also adding a tiny bit of context. So, for example, when characters are talking to themselves or rambling about their motivations, we saw that with Makima, we saw that with Denji. We did see it with Aki as well for one second here in the past episode. I know everybody's waiting for that moment, the crazy, disgusting moment that's about to happen. But which character are you most excited to see, Mizu?
I want to say it, but I don't want to ruin anything.
Okay.
I would say it's a little bit around the corner. It's another devil we're going to see, and I can't wait to see him scrap up.
Okay. Scrappiness. For me, I don't think it's really a much of a major spoiler since I double checked and we did see him during the opening credits. For me, it is the Sword Devil. I'm not gonna give you guys a ton. Yeah,
that's the person I was talking about. Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He's in. I triple checked. He's in the opening credits. So we've seen him. We've seen him. So the Sword Devil is a coming. You just have to like be a little quick about it if you want to see what he looks like through the intro credits. We're not gonna give a lot of spoilers on who he is. That's obviously left to the anime to decide. But if you thought chainsaws were cool, wait until you see the swords on this devil. Okay, it's absolutely it's bussing with a capital B.
The part I like the most about his character a little bit is first of all his introduction. Because that was so left field that I didn't even notice. I was like, huh? And then, you know, things just get wild after that. So I was like, whoa. I mean, I love the connection. One thing I love about Chainsaw Man and just manga in general is that the callbacks, everything connects. When you connect, it makes the story so much more better, so much cooler. But yeah, I would say, yeah, the Sword Devil, the Katana Devil, I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Hell yeah. Travis, you were going to say something, right?
Oh, yeah. I am now going to scan the intro.
Yes.
In my frame to see what the Sword Devil looks like.
Yes. He is really cool. And that's the thing about, I think, the devils around Chainsaw Man that are kind of different to the cursed spirits that we see or the demons that we see in Demon Slayer and Jujutsu Kaisen respectively. Because obviously a lot of people are saying, oh, Chainsaw Man is just like another copy of Demon Slayer or I've heard that on the internet and I am appalled because they all work differently. Cursed spirits work way differently than demons in Demon Slayer, and then all of them work differently to devils and fiends and stuff like that. So I think Chainsaw Man has the advantage, right, that these devils have context and logic behind them. So that's one of the things that we learned through this episode is that devils get more powerful the more that people fear their names. There's always been a connection with names in other cultures, in ancient Greece, in ancient Egypt. So a person's name or something's name is really important for their identity and for their overall purpose in the universe. So this takes it to the next level. So, for example, fearing coffee, which is the example that they give on the anime, doesn't really make sense, right? You can get, like, it's hot, so you can get burned, but a lot of people fear, you know, getting run over by a car or, guns, violence, airplane crashes. Like, so the more that humans fear something, there will be, at some point, a devil associated with it, whether it has OP powers or it's just, like, a random little, like, munchkin of an anime figure style level demon. It doesn't really matter. The thing is, it does exist. So I thought that piece of logic kind of excited me to see how people felt about it. And some people are resonating really well with it. How do you feel about that reveal, Mizu?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I love the concept. I love how they put all that together. And yeah, and that's so weird that people are calling it a copycat of Jujutsu Kaisen. I can understand maybe Jujutsu Kaisen a little bit, but Demon Slayer is not even remotely the same. That's such a weird-ass freaking oversimplification. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love the world building behind that, specifically power system. If anything, you know me, I love world building and all types of world building. And If you can't expand your world, at least show that world building through your power system. And I like how in Chainsaw Man, you see the world building through the power system of the devils. So yeah, I definitely love that.
Very, very true. Obviously, we're going to wait until our boy Travis catches up on that, and we are going to discuss every single thing all the way up to the finale. But our man knows. He knows that he has to catch up. He's missing out. He's missing out. Travis, you're missing out.
No, but guys, I need to binge. I'm a
Okay,
binger.
fair. We've had this conversation before. The binge model does do wonders.
The binge model.
You love the binge model. We all love the binge model, honestly. Like it's yeah, hey, it makes sense
Need to
for the most
defend
part.
it at all costs.
A couple of us, a couple of us, a couple of us. But besides that, there's been another major anime that has come back. It is My Hero Academia. We have more episodes. We are thrusted right into the war against the Paranormal Liberation Front. What a better way to set up a villain than those last 5 minutes in that last episode. Shigaraki is absolutely bonkers. If you haven't seen the episode yet, spoilers ahead. His decay quirk has been thrusted up to like a gajillion. We've seen casualties left, right, and center. And I have never seen somebody topple a whole city with the level of ferocity that this man has, just without zero consequence. I mean, we're kind of getting teased at like some physical consequence to using power at the scale, but he's essentially like he's essentially like a god of destruction at this point. Mizu, how did you react to this depiction of Shigaraki?
I absolutely love it for the simple fact of one thing I love the most is seeing a villain rise. Because we're so used to seeing, heroes from the bottom. We see them grow and they become the greatest that they are. But I don't know, it seems so much more interesting seeing a villain who is just meager and meek and just being almost you could say like a goon to becoming something even more than that, but the villain wise, which I think is so cool. And I like how their My Hero Academia is doing that with Shigaraki. Because let's be honest, in the beginning, Shigaraki just seemed like that weirdo emo kid who doesn't have lotion, just ashy
Facts.
all over the place, and is just in his corner. And I said, oh yeah, don't, like that meme, don't touch me, I'll murder you. No pain in my heart and all that kind of stuff. But and then we're all focused on All for One. We're all sitting here like, okay, well, the real threat seems like it's All for One right here. But no, as the series progresses, we see Shigaraki becoming a threat. He's making money moves. He's talking to people. He's not a social person. Well, he's trying to become a social person so he can work with people and be on his side. And now at the end of that episode, yes, freaking love it. Shigaraki, don't sleep on Shigaraki.
And then we also have a little tease for what I forget, always forget its full name, Gigantomachia, or like the huge ass giant that's hiding
Yes.
under the villa. Okay, so this monster is about to show up, and I'm still waiting on Deku and the gang to actually show up. I'm like, bro, people, you're taking casualties. You guys were about to win, and then Shigaraki got woken up by some BS. I was like, bro. You could have slept this man so quick, and you just let him get up and destroy your entire force just by himself. So now I'm gonna need to see Deku step up. I know he can. I just know that Bakugo's gonna get in the way at some point. I just know it's gonna happen. Listen, I don't trust that man farther than I can throw him. But I'm excited. I'm excited. How many episodes do we have left for the season? Do you know? I'm pretty sure
Honestly,
it's
I
going to be like a
don't.
15. Isn't it supposed to be like a 15 or 20 episode season or more?
Probably 15 to 20. Can't
Okay.
see money further than that.
Okay, bet. And then, okay, so another question logistically, because have you finished the manga? Or like, are you caught
Yes.
up?
Oh,
Okay.
well, it's not, the manga's not done
Yeah.
yet, but I'm semi caught up with the manga.
Okay, bet. So that okay. So we have a couple of episodes left. We still have a lot to see from the side of the heroes because obviously they have b basically been on the offensive. Now that they have their super weapon on the villain side, we have to see how they respond. So that's going to be super cool. So far, I think I would give the episode probably like an A. I felt like there was a little bit missing on the side of the heroes, but that encounter between Hawks, twice, and I always forget. Oh my God, the Falcon, the Shadow Falcon dude. I always forget his full name. His full name. Yeah, that encounter that we had with Dobby, where like he actually has to deal with the fact that not all of the heroes that I admire have perfect senses of morality. They do sometimes do crazy shit in order for us to actually succeed. So that moment actually resonated a lot with me. Do you have anything else for My Hero Academia? I think we're just waiting to see the heroes at this point.
Yep, and I think it's also another reason why people shouldn't sleep on My Hero Academia, especially if you read the manga. You know, all that, the stuff they were doing in the beginning, all that kiki and ha-haing, it stopped.
It's done.
It stopped. Like, especially where I'm at, I sometimes a little bit, there are occasions where I'm missing it. I'm like, dang, remember when things used to be funny? This is just terrible right now.
Remember when we had sports festivals?
Exactly. Remember when we had that beach episode? Yeah, we're not doing that at all.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And it is all smoke.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then y'all need to stop sleeping on Deku, too. Man's wild. Yeah. But anyway, overall, I also like this episode. I'll definitely give it like a, I'll give it a 9 out of 10.
Okay. That's a solid ranking. That's a solid ranking for an episode. With that said, we also have a couple more anime to cover before we get into the big juicy parts. Blue Lock is finally out. Tell us how you're feeling about Blue Lock right now, Mizu. Is it living up to your expectations?
Honestly, like I said before, I had no information or background on this. I just heard buzz on the internet about it at first before it came out. And now finally watching it, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. The competition, the whole concept is wild. It's like, right now people are saying, oh, it's like Haikyuu but with soccer. But I'm like, I don't really see any of the Haikyuu elements until this recent episode a little bit. But like, there's nothing funny going on right now. You know, they have those funny moments. They're chiming with each other. Like, we have a moment in this recent episode with the main character chiming with another guy. But overall, no, it's straight. Everybody is against each other. Like, yeah, we may be on the same team, but when the opportunity arises, I'm going to screw each and every one of you, kind of thing, like, to get my shine. Like, it's wild. It's so wild to the point where I was reacting to, because I have on my YouTube channel, I was reacting to the episode 3. And yeah, they were playing their teams and they were fighting each other. Like, I don't want to say scrapping, but they were fighting each other, taking the ball. And I was like, it's a madhouse. It's a great madhouse. What am I watching? Like, yeah, this is a sports anime. It's about teamwork. But no, they said, no, screw that. Screw teamwork.
Hey, there, in the great words of Michael Jordan, there is no I in team, but there is an ME in that bitch. Okay, so like,
honestly, not gonna lie, that fits the show perfectly.
Yeah,
legit. That's pretty much. And but what the part that doesn't help is that it's all run by an administrator. I still don't get his name. I just call him Mandark because the man looks like Mandark from Dexter's Laboratory.
Does
got the haircut and everything, glasses. And he's just feeding this to his kids, like, oh yeah, you guys gotta do well, because if you don't, I'm kicking your ass out. You will never play soccer again professionally. You can play on the side to make yourself have fun, but if you want to play this for seriously, never, never in this country. Go somewhere else. And they're like, dang.
Yeah, I've never seen stakes so high in a sports anime before. Like, I love Hajime no Ippo. I love Haikyuu. I liked I saw a couple basketball anime too, but it was nothing like this. Like, this facility will destroy any future of a career for these kids that don't make it through this program. And it's structured to be like, yeah, we are purposely only going to take one. And all of this promising young talent that could have potential, like, to be great for the team some point in the line or whatever, forget you. Like, we're completely shutting the door on you. I love those level, that level of stakes. I love that the facility is trying to change who these kids are. Just period. Like, it's something refreshing for me to watch in a shonen where, especially a sports shonen, where it's like not just about winning, but it's about being a different kind of person, like an evil, twisted person.
Yeah, they really like the whole thing, like he says, is ego. Like he wants to bring out the ego of these children. He wants the kids to be egotistical, and it's showing already. Like I was like, I don't think you need to do any more. I think they're already showing it regardless. But some people brought up like it's kind of also like Squid Game. And at first I was like, oh, I don't know. But the reason I would say it's a little bit like Squid Game is that they all each have a number representing where they are in the lineup. And it's not just like random, like in Squid Game. It's like purposeful that right now in the series, we have 275 kids playing. And whatever that number is, that's where you rank. So our main character is 274. Like he's not at the bottom, but he's the second to the bottom. And
Oof.
because of that, he only gets certain privileges or things like that. So he, when they go to go eat at their little cafeteria place, he scans his number. And they'll give him what his number deserves. Like, okay, you're gonna get a little ramen box. Eat that. Well, this other character, who's higher up on it, he gets a full-on steak and everything. I'm like, whoa, what?
The full definition of meritocracy, but like on us on
Exactly
an
to the
exaggerated scale.
point where now you're sitting here like, dang, not only I have to try harder because, I just want to be in the sport, I have to try harder if I want to get better food. Not even just the food. These because the guy said the main orchestrator is like that also applies to equipment, gym equipment, all this stuff you want, the better you get, the better facilities you get. I'm like, wow. Yeah, no wonder these kids are fighting for their lives in this thing. But it's wild.
I totally get that. I totally get that. I feel like that's one of those type of animes that you have to watch. Like it technically wants to make you like feel like the competitive edge, but obviously like these stakes are way too high. Like nobody is going to enjoy doing this long term if it means that like, oh, if I'm level like if I'm 275, I'm literally not going to get enough food to survive. That's not my jam. I would rather not play football ever again, okay? That's not my
And
vibe.
I think the part I'm still trying to grasp is that, mind you, they're doing all this to find one guy. It's not like we're looking for a team or a certain amount of ki kids we can pick to go to, nationals. They're looking for one person out of all over 200 plus kids to pick. So that means at the end of this series, there's going to be one man standing.
Hey.
And granted, it could still most likely be the main character, but I just want to see how we get there
Yeah.
is the thing.
It's just like Highlander, man. There can only be one, okay? There can only be one.
Facts.
Very factual, very factual. Besides that, I think well, besides Blue Lock, right? The only major anime that's also like, I mean, it's making a lot of waves is obviously Spy Family, right? So Spy Family is continuing with all the steam that it had before. We finally met Yor's brother. We are deeper and deeper into Operation Strix. Anya had to save somebody. We're not gonna say how if you haven't seen the episode. Spoilers like that. This is the point where the spoilers are in. Anya is doing her part. I did not expect that. She's trying to do as much as she can outside of the classroom because our girl does not like the numbers, does not like the mathematics. She doesn't like the stuff in the classroom. Everything outside of it, though, she is game to try to actually earn her stars, including origami. And including arts and crafts. Like she is a talented, creative little girl. I am excited for Anya moving forward. This is my favorite feel good anime, I think, of the year. How have you been feeling about the show so far, Mizu and Travis?
I absolutely love it. I saw the more recent episodes. I won't go into too much if you haven't watched it already, so spoilers and stuff. But especially with Yor, there was a recent episode with Yor and her little dilemma with cooking and all that stuff. So I thought that episode right there, when I read it in the manga, this was like, yep, I freaking love this series. This right here is like to me the quintessential moment. I'm like, yep. Yeah, this is my favorite. This
We
is
like that. We like that.
And then, of course, you know, there's also moments where I keep forgetting, but it still feels good sometimes to the point where you forget that other stuff happens. Like, oh, next thing you know, Yor just killed the man. Like, oh, whoa, what happened? I thought, oh, no, I forgot. This is still a shonen. This is not a slice of life that someone just got murdered. It's fine. Okay. But I won't go into detail. But yeah, in the manga, that kind of stuff is happening right now because something wild just happened, but can't wait to see it animated. But yeah, overall, this anime has been top tier.
I think all of the characters have their own specific moment to shine. I absolutely love
Yes.
Twilight. I love Yor. Yuri is a little bit crazy. I'm not gonna lie. N no cap. Th that man has some slight issues. We don't like that. But Anya is my favorite character. I think everybody's favorite character is Anya, I think, to some extent.
Without a doubt, easily.
So okay,
No,
so
I'm gonna say Bond for me. I'm just kidding.
Bond?
Oh,
Bondoman. Nice.
great.
What are your thoughts on Spy Family?
I think that where it really shines is that it does something that I really haven't seen other anime do. And it's a balancing act between three different genres of feel good, drama, and comedy. It does it spectacularly well. So I'm really invested in the story and the dynamic in these between Anya and Twilight and Yor. I love just seeing this family through Anya's eyes as well. There's so much good that's happening with this anime, and I'm someone who loves psychological thrillers. So I'm like, you know, if I'm not on the edge of my seat, I'm not that invested in it or what have you. But this has my whole heart, and I can't wait to finish this new season when it all comes out because I'm letting it, you know, build up so I could binge it later.
Hey, we like that. We like that. We appreciate that. Hey, the effort is what counts, right? We're gonna get there eventually, and we're all going to enjoy an amazing feel-good anime that's dominating the charts when it comes to manga sales and, of course, anime viewership. But with that said, I think that's enough anime for right now, because there's a lot of stuff we have to cover on the other side of pop culture, starting with the biggest movie Marvel has probably hyped up in years. Black Panther 2, Wakanda Forever is coming out in less than 2 weeks from the recording of this episode, November 11th. Mark your calendars, the cultural event of the winter season. Or at least that's what we think is going to happen. There's been some reviews that have been released so far. People have mixed opinions. A lot of people saying that it's overwhelmingly positive, at least on one side. Some people saying that it's a step down from the original, or that maybe some story aspects don't really land the way that they should. I wanted to get your opinions first on what are your expectations for the film, what have been your reactions to the reviews that have come out so far, and then how hyped are you to see this movie?
When I saw the reactions, first of all, I want to say this. Before the movie was even announced or in conception, I was incredibly nervous, very nervous, because you know, with the passing of Chadwick and all the other issues going behind the scenes with it, I was very nervous of what was going to happen with it. Is this because behind the scenes it sounded like a train wreck? It sounded like a train wreck waiting to happen, especially, and it doesn't help that, you know, a lot of people are very lukewarm to phase four. There's some people who like parts of it. There's some people who absolutely hate it. I mean, I see it all the time on YouTube, every other thumbnail saying why the MCU is dead. I personally think that's being overly dramatic, but that's just me. But yeah, and I'm just like, oh, please, please don't let this be a dud. Because, you know, everybody had mixed feelings about Multiverse of Madness, Thor, Love and Thunder, Eternals, the only two rising stars out of Phase 4 thus far that people don't have any real complaints about so far is, you know, Shang-Chi and Spider-Man No Way Home in terms of movies wise. And then, of course, you got the shows. So yeah, I was just hoping that. And then they also announced that this is going to be the last film of Phase 4. I'm just like, oh, please, like let it go with a bang. And then we got the premiere, and hearing a lot of people's reactions to it, it made me very excited. Very excited and very emotional at the same time, because I'm like, everybody's saying that it's very emotional. You're gonna cry at some point, somewhere in there. It's gonna happen at least once. everybody has been so far very positive. I did see some criticism, like one saying that it's a step down from the first Black Panther, which to me, I don't really see that as a bad thing because I mean the first Black Panther is hard to beat. Like it's one of the they even said it themselves, like one of the crowning jewels of the MCU. So when I hear that, it's like I'm that to me is not like alarming to me. Because yeah, how are you gonna top that? You could, you maybe, but sequels are 50-50. Either they're better than the original or they're still good but not as great as the original. That's the two points you could be in. And I also saw another art review saying that, oh, it's not possibly Oscar worthy like the first one was, which I'm not even considering that. So that to me didn't really mean anything to me. I'm like, okay, I'm not really expecting any of these superhero films to be Oscar worthy in the first place, since that's a whole conniption for those guys. But overall, I'm excited, and I'm even more excited for Namor because I heard nothing but positive things about Namor. And I'm being honest, just off of the design alone, I love the design of Namor. Granted, I still haven't seen the movie yet, but based off design alone, I'm obsessed with it. A low key, like I love it. I love the mixing of cultures because before that, to me, I'm not gonna lie, in terms of design, besides obviously a recent, relatively recent design in the comics, he just seemed very dull looking. Okay, yeah, he's there. Okay, cool. But then once this design came out and seeing all the little snippets they've been posting lately, gosh, I'm like, yes, I would love to see more of this Namor. This Namor looks really cool. I'm excited. The man looks like a demigod. The man, I mean, the way they sound in the trailers, he sounds like a freaking mythological hero. I mean, what's he called? His name was Kukulkan. I'm like,
Cool guy.
okay, this feather serpent god. I like that. That's awesome. Overall, I'm excited. I can't wait to see it. I know for a fact. I'm so weird to say, but I'm looking forward to crying. I'm looking forward to it. I want to see what they're gonna do that's gonna mess me up. But yeah, can't wait.
Totally agree. How about you, Travis? How are you excited? Are you excited? What do you think about the reviews that people have come out with so far? And do you think this movie is going to live up to the hype that people have put out over the past couple of years?
Okay, so firstly, I'm extremely excited for this. Like, my hype is through the roof. And it's specifically because these are two of the greatest trailers. And I guess some people could say I'm being a little hyperbolic here, but I'm genuinely saying this. These are two of arguably the best trailers I've seen for a movie in general. I've never had a trailer itself impact me in the way I've been impacted by the trailer for Wakanda Forever. Just from that rollout, from the portrayal of Namor, he's also one of my favorite adaptations of a hero. Piggybacking off what Mitu was saying, he's one of my favorite adaptations physically that I've seen of a superhero to film. I think what they're doing with him is so cool, and it looks like it's just such a great direction, way better than his comic portrayal. And as for the reactions online, I only saw one reaction from a critic who was like, this is a step down. And even that person was like, I like it a lot. And he thought that Angela Bassett was go did an Oscar-worthy performance. So if we're already having in someone who was the only negative reaction I've seen is saying that there's an Oscar-worthy performance in here, and that the acting overall is incredible. Namor was great. It looks great. I mean, I'm going to be good. I'm going to be good watching this movie. I'm extremely excited to see this sequel. And as for if it's going to live up to the expectations, I do. I think it's going to blow it out of the water. Again, if you're having trailers this good, where people are crying from just seeing snippets of your movie, it shows that on the leadership side, when it comes to the direction of just the rollout and the movie itself, they are doing everything right. So they have my trust. Ryan Coogler has my trust. This cast has my trust. I think they're going to destroy it.
I totally agree. I totally agree. There's definitely a lot of pressure from the first Black Panther movie to try to fill those shoes, right? We have to be like completely straight up, right? Black Panther, the original one, A, It had the beauty of the magisterial performance from Chadwick Boseman embodying this character, making this an emblem not only for the superhero community but for the African American community, for Black people as a whole. It's kind of surreal to kind of to it's surreal and I would say ineffective, right? To try to hold a movie to such a high standard that its predecessor set, right? It doesn't really make sense logically to me to just have that comparison directly with that because they serve different purposes. We knew from the beginning of filming, as soon as we got the news that Chadwick Boseman was not going to reprise his role because he passed away, that this was going to be a grief-stricken film. And as a matter of fact, over the past couple of days, there's been reports coming out that there's a podcast happening with insider scoops on the filming and the production of Black Panther, which I believe starts to release next Tuesday, in which the production and crew are going to talk about the experience of filming this project, right? And yep. Part of that whole enterprise is to show, look, the story that we had before was basically still was centered around Namor as the main antagonist, but it was still centered around grief. Remember, T'Challa spent 5 years away from Wakanda when Thanos snapped. So we still have 5 years of this man's leadership that is gone. People have had to pick up his slack. That was the original plan, right? Now he came back and then got unalived. So it's crazy to think, but we still don't know how exactly it happens. But we all know that it's going to happen because they said that Chadwick was not going to be like digitally remastered or anything like that. They were going to do his character justice just as they did his performance. I'm excited to see Angela Bassett give an amazing performance as Queen Ramonda. From the trailers, those scenes at the United Nations where she's trying to protect Wakanda from usurpers, both on the courtroom and then as a queen, those are going to be some deep, hard-hitting moments. I want to see Dominic Thorne crush it as Ironheart. I want to see Lupita Nyong'o. Also, yeah, she's coming back. And then we also have M'Baku. Okoye is apparently a big part of this movie as well. So there is a ton of context that we still need upon this tragic incident in the movie specifically. And then how they deal with the future of Wakanda, right? Since it's such a powerful nation and has such a valuable resource at their disposal, how are they able to maintain a clear head, protect what is theirs, but at the same time maintain a certain level of diplomacy with the outside world? When it comes to the reviews, I would say the overwhelming majority of people have said that this is going to be just an emotional roller coaster, right? This is going to have you in your feels. And I feel like it's time for that. It's perfectly fine to have this movie be an emotional goodbye to Chadwick's character and then have another Black Panther movie that focuses more on the positive sides, right? Well, the future of the character. Who's going to like... I mean, we've already gotten like teases that it is going to be Shuri. We kind of know at this point that it's most likely going to be Shuri as the Black Panther. How does she step into the Avengers? How does she step into the role eventually? And like, will we see a variant at some point since the multiverse is a thing? But this is a self-contained story and I'm very excited for it.
Another thing that got me excited is because there was one other reviewer, I watched her, and she's been known for very tumultuous reviews that she gives. She's in the 50-50, so I'm like, but at the same time, I respect her for her honesty, though. But she watched it, and I was like, oh, crap. Uh-huh. What on earth do you have to say? And she also was like, this is amazing. This is good. Like she said, the MCU's not dead. And like the stuff you liked, she said, it's the stuff you guys like from phase 1 through 3. She said, yeah, it's there in Wakanda Forever. So I said, okay, that's cool. That's cool. I'm looking forward to that. Another thing I'm also very confident about with it is that it seems pretty much like Disney and Marvel seems very confident because they've been putting out a lot of promotional stuff for it. I've been seeing more little clips and things like promos. That. Like, wow, y'all are really confident. Like y'all, and mind you, not saying they haven't, but like I've never seen this much of it. We never got this many clips from Thor: Love and Thunder, Multiverse of Madness, none of that.
Oh
It's
yeah.
but Wakanda Forever, I'm seeing more stuff with Namor in it, especially Namor, because I guess everybody was hyping up Namor and a lot of people said a lot of good things about him. So they kept showing more. I'm seeing more clips, a little bit of him, and they look amazing. And I'm definitely want to know what the conflict is. I got a little snippet of it from the clips, but it's very interesting, and I can't wait to see Talo Khan and how that's all set up, and the portrayal of Namor. Because right now it sounds like he, my one of my biggest fears is that MCU love it to death, but they have a bad history of killing off great villains, or just villains in general that you honestly could build off of, even if they start off a weak, like, oh yeah, Yellow Jacket from the Ant-Man movie, he was kind of whack. But if you kept him alive, you could have made him better through time. That's just an argument. Or, my man Wen Wu from Shang-Chi, loved him. Granted, in his defense, it made sense for the story why he died, but I still think you could have kept him, but because he was so fantastic. But I was worried about are they going to kill off Namor? They better not do some weird stuff and just let him go in the dust. But no, he sounds like a protagonist as well. Like, he sounds like a protagonist, but on the other side. So I want to see if there going to be a moment kind of like Killmonger where who are you rooting for? Who are you rooting for at the end of it? So I'll see.
Hey, I'm rooting for Tenoch Huerta, even if he's the bad guy, okay? I'm always rooting for that man. I've always loved his performances. Hey, he's there's a ton of representation that is well appreciated in this film. I'm glad that they made the changes that they did. So they're taking two birds with one stone and making huge strides in representation for Afro-Latinos, Latinos in general, and then also with the African American community. And there's I think this is going to be a celebration as much as it is a funeral. Does that make sense? It's going to be just as much of celebrating life as it is honoring those that have passed on. Travis, do you have some final thoughts on Black Panther?
Only that I think that the way Namor is going to be my gut feeling from this. I think that when Namor is on the screen, the effect that Killmonger had on us is the kind of effect I think Namor is going to have.
I heard his entrance was apparently people said that his entrance was amazing. I kept saying, oh yeah, the way he came into the story, the way he showed up, I'm like, dang, what is he gonna do? But continue, Travis.
Yeah, no, and look, no one was even saying that about Killmonger, right? Just we always honed in more on the philosophy of Killmonger and everything else. I feel like with this, with the kind of hype that is around Namor, the way that he's his from his name to the background of where he's from, and I haven't even heard the actual entrance, but I have heard the same thing where people are like, that entrance is nuts. He is going to be Killmonger level. And I think this move, that's more of the reason why I really think this movie is going to either meet expectations or exceed it, because I think a movie is only as good as its villain. And this villain slash kind of protagonist is going to be insane.
We love that. We love that. I think it's gonna be great. But with that said, we still have a couple of days left. Try to avoid spoilers as much as you can. Don't go on Twitter without muting certain things because we've already gotten a ton of clips. It's only a matter of time before people start putting up the end credit scene and stuff like that. So let's keep everybody safe before the actual release. With that said, I think we have another big movie that we want to talk about that just got a new trailer. We are, of course, talking about Avatar: The Way of the Water, which is releasing in December, possibly the quietest release for a major AAA budget movie. I mean, this is like James Cameron's magnum opus. Like, this five movie storyline, which is taking over 30 years to produce. I saw the trailer and I was like, bro, this thing looks even better than the original and from 2009. And I mean, obviously, technology has evolved, and obviously, they're not giving away as many details when it comes to the plot of the film before the actual press cycle begins in early December. But I feel like this is quietly becoming like a reality right now. It's like, oh shit, like maybe it's not too late to release Avatar. People are actually excited to see this. How do you guys feel about Avatar and obviously James Cameron's return to the big screen?
Honestly, when I saw it as a kid, I was infatuated by it, especially obviously the visuals at the time were amazing. As I got older, then I got a little more cynical. I'm like, but is it that good though? Is it really that good? Like, yeah, it's talking about the environment, and like, of course, they got their story beats talking about, you know, like I said, the environment and indigenous folks, and of course, you know, capitalism at its finest and all the problems there. And I rewatched it again, and I'll say it is good. It is good. I'm like, okay, I still think it's good. Do I think it's like, does it deserve to be the what was it, the highest grossing movie of all time? It's debatable. Debatable for me. But after seeing that trailer for the Avatar 2, looks amazing. And now the part that's so funny is that there's a little chatter online about how now we got two movies out, high blockbuster movies based around water. Wakanda Forever with Namor, and then now Avatar 2. It's called The Way of Water?
Yeah, Avatar The Way of the Water.
Way of the Water. So I'm like, okay, who would do better than the other? But yeah, it looks very interesting, and I honestly can't wait to see what they do. And maybe they might blow our minds and make us remind us, like, okay, yeah, this is good. Yeah, stop dissing on Avatar. But that's just me.
Travis, I see you over there. You're not so convinced. You're not looking so convinced on this one. Tell us how you're feeling about Avatar.
Guys, I'll start off by just saying this. I want to give Avatar its flowers. There's only been two times where I felt that I understood why we need to go to theaters to see a movie. And it was Endgame and Avatar. Endgame was an experience, and so was Avatar. Being in that theater and watching that movie on that screen, I felt like I entered an entirely different domain. And it was an experience watching that movie at that time with that level of technology and detail. It was riveting. And even though the plot isn't the most complex, convoluted, profound thing out there, the story itself was so captivating. I could understand why that movie is the highest grossing movie of all time. It is something that you needed to see in theaters. That being said, I do think it's a little too late for Avatar 2. Yeah. I do. Again, I gave it its flowers, but for something like that to be coming out so much later and it didn't have such a strong plot to begin with, I'm not excited to go see it. I'm like, you know, I think that I would get really good graphics, but if that's it, and this isn't something that has legacy, or it was going somewhere else, or we were on some sort of cliffhanger of some kind, I don't know why we waited. If it was just to produce graphics, I'm not, like, if there's a game that I'm waiting for, I don't want to wait for a video game because it was it needs to be made with the most top tier graphics of all time. I'm here for story. I'm here for gameplay. Mm-hmm. Is it good? And to me, Avatar, on a plot level, it's not good enough to have warranted how many years? What, a decade or what have you, right?
More, close to 15. Yeah. Because it came out 2009.
15 years. The amount of time that it's not been on, that we've been waiting for this, that age is of a high schooler. That's insane. Like, no. I think it's not something that I particularly am excited for.
I get you on that. But what if it pulls a Top Gun Maverick? You gotta remember, the link.
Oh, I like that, me too.
I like that analogy. Go in. Let us know.
Top Gun came out in what, 1980?
Yep.
Yeah.
1989? 19, like almost 1990?
I think so. I'll check it out.
Late 1980s or maybe early 1990s. But then we got Top Gun Maverick.
1986. 1986.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then we got Top Gun Maverick. Almost what? 30 years? Almost 30 years since then. And now it became, and everybody said the same thing. Like, why did we wait this long for a sequel? Like, this is not even a reboot or nothing. This is a sequel to a movie that came almost 30 years ago. What the hell? And surprisingly enough, it blew everyone away. It blew me away. I'm not gonna lie, I went to the movie theater out of spite. I just did it once because I wanted to see it fail. I'm like, oh yeah, I want to see this train wreck. And I ended up loving the film. I'm like, wow, this is really good. I'm like, am I crazy? Am I in the no minority here about this? And then everybody kept saying, oh, this is great, this is great. I'm like, oh, so it was pretty good, I guess. And but no, it blew everybody at my workplace would not stop talking about it for like a whole 2 weeks. So yeah, now granted, that is almost like what? A one in a million chance that happens, I will admit. But I will say it's not impossible.
No. And I'm glad you said that, because if this is a Top Gun Maverick case, I will come on this podcast and eat my words humbly. But I don't think humble pie will be served on this podcast. I just don't think it's going to deliver. You could clip that or whatever. I don't.
Hope you're right.
It is at this moment that Travis knew he fucked up.
But here's the thing, I'm not gonna lie to you, Travis. Here's the thing, I agree with you, honestly. I agree with you. I don't really think, like, in terms of plot, it's really not that. It's very basic. And it what keeps it up is the visuals. But then again, like I said, with Top Gun Maverick and other stuff like that, I'm like, but you never know. Movies come out of nowhere and change things. So I'm trying to keep it open. And plus, karma's funny as hell. So I'm not trying to be in that corner, but best of luck to you.
I'll come in here like a YouTuber apology, and I'll be like, I was wrong.
Hey, we'll wait for that day. We'll definitely wait for that day, especially since, like, because James Cameron said that, or James Cameron's plan, right, was to release the next three films, like really close to each other, right, less than
The
2 years.
Lord
Like really close to each other with less than 2 years, I think, of wait between them. So, like,
of
we won't have to wait 15 years for the next one. Like the 5-part series is supposed to come out really close to each other. So I think if this is a hit, it'll have people a lot more enticed to actually get invested. Because if it's a story of this magnitude that we've just waited a lot of time for the graphics to, catch up to the level that he wants it again, I think it makes a lot of sense to for us to get excited if it pulls in that audience once December comes. I mean, I've trusted James Cameron before. He did Terminator 2. I love that. He also did Aliens, also another amazing sequel. I love that man. But you actually you had something you wanted to talk to us about James Cameron, right, Mizu?
So apparently my man has a class on Masterclass, and he talks about filmmaking and how the whole filmmaking process happens and what he does. And like you said, Jose, he man is a great director, and he gives you all the tips and tricks on how to be a good filmmaker.
Totally agree. I totally agree. How about you, Travis? I think you've talked about Masterclass before. Are there any classes that pique your interest right now?
Oh yeah, definitely. And one thing that I is a really big one that I want to do is for LeVar Burton, because I grew up on Reading Rainbow, and just even with storytelling in general, I think great stories give meaning to the experiences of being alive. And LeVar Burton is one of the greatest storytellers of our time. So to learn from him how to relay stories is like an honor. So I'm really excited for that class.
I feel that. I feel that. I feel that. I mean, right now, the one that I looked at that I found really enticing is I'm a big Formula One fan. So the one that for Lewis Hamilton actually like spoke to me because he not only speaks about the power of a winning mindset, but also building practical skills as you hone in your main skill. So As you're trying to, you know, perfect your craft, you also have to learn auxiliary skills to kind of help your travel along the way. So I want to learn a little bit more about his career path from the inside scoop. So that makes a ton of sense to me, at least on my end. But if you guys have never heard about this before, what exactly is a masterclass, right? So it's basically online classes, right? On a variety of different topics taught by the world-class instructors and experts at the top of their fields. So each class is broken into individual video lessons, usually around 10 minutes long. And then you as a member can explore these lessons at your own pace. And each class is supported by materials that you can download, right? So I highly recommend that you check it out and see which ones you want to check out for yourself. There's some for business. There's some for sports, entertainment. Anything you can think of, there is an expert ready for you, right? So I highly recommend you check it out, and you can get unlimited access to every class as a Weeb Weekly listener, right? You can get a 15% off your annual membership. So all you have to do is go to masterclass.com/weeb right now. So that's masterclass.com/weeb for 15% off your masterclass. With that said, we have another big news item on the docket that has sent the entire internet ablaze. Would you guys like to talk about this? Because there's some super duper news coming from the end of Henry Cavill himself. Superman is back, ladies and gentlemen. We officially have confirmation. Henry Cavill will be coming back for Man of Steel 2. It's not the only piece of news, but how did you guys react to this piece of amazing pop culture news?
Honestly, I was more excited. I was at first a little indifferent. And then I thought about it. I'm like, no, I'm actually genuinely excited because, don't get me wrong, I'm personally not a fan of Zack Snyder's interpretation of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, and even, it's not even just his fault. I feel like a lot of, besides, you know, Christopher Reeve Superman, a lot of live action versions of Superman have just been not good.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they don't understand him. And I feel like Henry Cavill is a good Superman. He's just not given the opportunity to really showcase his version of Superman. And if you give him a good script, a good story, I think Henry Cavill can really blow it out of the park.
I agree. How about you, Travis?
I kind of disagree with you guys. And just as a disclaimer.
We like that.
just as a disclaimer. I really like Henry Cavill. He's a fellow nerd. I've seen interviews with him. He seems like an amazing guy. Mm-hmm. And I do think that he has acting chops. It's nothing about that. Even his portrayal of Superman, I don't think was bad. Even though that the movies that he's been portraying Superman in have not been very well critically received, I do think that he could kill the job. The thing with me is that DC is going in a different direction, mm-hmm. right? This is about a DC rebirth. We're seeing that James Gunn is now head of TV and film, and we're seeing DC going in a brand new direction. And because of that, I think we just need to wipe the slate clean, and we need a new Superman to represent this new era of DC that we're entering. It's nothing against Henry Cavill. I just think that we need to give someone else a opportunity to be the face of this new Superman that that they're working on.
All right. I've seen a lot of hot takes on the internet surrounding that, and they're perfectly valid. Personally, Henry Cavill is my second favorite Superman. On the live action side, obviously with Christopher Reeves as the top dog in that space. I will say, I want to see Henry Cavill come back as Superman for one reason and one reason only. A, he is in love with being faithful to the source material. And that extends to the other conversation that we're going to have with The Witcher, right? So he is no longer going to be the main character for The Witcher after season 3, okay? So Geralt is not going to be portrayed by our man, Henry Cavill, because he felt that the directors and the showrunners and the writers were kind of straying away from the source material to an extent, from the books and the even the video games, which take their own departures from the franchise, that he was like, look, if you guys are going to disrespect the source material, I don't want to do it anymore. And they were like, okay, we'll just recast. So as The Witcher loses its primary source of entertainment, I would say, because Henry Cavill in that role was what made me actually want to watch The Witcher, Superman gains somebody that is clearly invested in being faithful to Superman's lore. He said that in an interview recently, that like he wants Superman to be portrayed with the joy and gravitas that he commands in the comics, for example. Because like, I think at this point, we are all, maybe not all, but a large majority of us, including myself, are a little bit tired of the evil Superman narrative in live action.
Absolutely. God right. damn it. Ray, you are on the money there. I am sick of that crap.
Right?
I'm so tired of the evil Superman, evil Injustice Superman, even the freaking metaphors for Superman, evil Superman, is wild to me. I'm done with it. I want the true boy blue Superman. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, the Boy Scout. We want to see the Boy Scout. It's like, I can't save everybody, but I'm trying. And then like, I have to figure out my relationship with Lois and being obviously like a god tier superhero. And I have to like, what about my relationship with Batman? Like, Batman and Superman are friends. They literally lead the most powerful group of superheroes in the entire universe. Like, the perfect example that I have is, look at Justice League Unlimited. Look at Justice League Unlimited. Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman have a deep friendship with each other. Even the Flash, Flash and Green Lantern, they're always going head to head with Batman and bantering and always being like scuffy with each other. They all love each other so much. And the portrayal of the Justice League that we've had so far has not been anything close to that. It's all been Injustice. And I'm like, bro, if I wanted to see evil Superman and fuck everybody up, I would just play Injustice and Injustice 2 again. Like, I don't want to see that all the time in live action.
Exactly. And I feel like, again, it goes back to my whole thing about, I feel like a lot of people just don't understand Superman. And of course, we would make jokes, and I won't play holier than that. I have my whole stint as a teenager being anti-Superman because I'm like, oh, he's too good. He's too morally correct. Like, that's not realistic. But then as I got older and rereading his comics, I'm like, this is great. We need this. He's amazing. He's become one of my favorite superheroes again through that. And I think his character is so important. And especially when you're talking about the relationship, because think about it, they all play a role in the Justice League. Batman is the logic. He is the one who brings the logic and the critical thinking to the Justice League. Like, hey, let's think this through. Wonder Woman, she's the charisma. She's always like, you know what I mean? She's always on 10. She's always there in the battle. She's never faltered. And then you got to remember, Superman is the hope. He's the hope. He's a symbol of hope. He is the moral support of the group.
Moral anger, yeah.
Exactly. Like, to the point where we've even seen in comic books that when Superman is gone, all the other Justice League members and heroes all alike have changed drastically because Superman was missing. Superman was gone. Everybody thought he was dead. Batman became more like volatile and more dark. Wonder Woman has gone on whole she-warrior monster. Barry just lost hope and running altogether. Green Lantern just left the planet. Wow. So it was like, and all because Superman was gone.
I agree.
Yeah, overall, like, yeah, like, Superman is fantastic. And yeah, I'm sick and tired of seeing the evil Superman. Give us the Boy Scout. Give us the hope.
Yeah, and to even piggyback off of what you guys are saying, I'll be very frank with you guys. I am a little anti-Superman. I am. But it's only because in the live-action portrayals of him, his live-action portrayal has never landed with me emotionally. And where he has landed with me, though, is in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. Like, seeing that version of Superman, I was like, this is actually a pretty good character. And seeing it done right makes the Injustice version interesting. If we just focus on the Injustice version without really establishing the hope that Superman really is, the Injustice version just loses its flair or its interest. Like, it doesn't really have any substance there.
I want to say real quick that one of my favorite stories of Superman is where it's an All-Star Superman. All-Star mm-hmm. Superman is pretty much a comic where it's a bunch of short stories of Superman doing things. Nothing huge, like him fighting villains, but it's him doing everyday stuff, helping out the everyday man. And one of my favorites is that there's this young girl on a building about to, you know, about to kill herself and all that stuff. And she's about to jump and everything. And Superman shows up there and talking to her, like, hey, are you okay? And he said, leave me alone. I want to be left alone. If you don't leave me alone, I'm going to jump and all that stuff. He said, no, I'm here for you. You don't have to talk now. Just talk whenever you're ready. And we see the next panel. It's nighttime. The next panel, it's daytime. He's sitting there in floating, watching her. And she's just sitting here. And then they have the lights of police are down there. They're flashing a light, the giant lights up there. And she said, man, those lights are so bright. And he's like, oh, those lights bothering you? Yeah, a little bit. He goes down. He laser visions the lights. And he still sits there. And then... and she opens up to him like, hey, like I'm tired. I'm tired of life and all that stuff. And he's just like, I just want to end it.
I'm not strong. She says, I'm not strong.
And he sits there and she's like, no, I get it. Life can be hard. Life can be really, it can suck. And especially, like, I can't save everyone. But here, I'm going to give you an option. If you still feel that way, I won't stop you. I do recommend that you come with me. But if you do feel, if you have one sliver of hope that you will have a good day at least once, then jump to me. And she jumps to him. And I was like, holy crap. That's freaking Superman. Okay. That's what Superman is.
That is Superman. Okay.
Now I'm telling you this. That does not exist. Live action.
That does, it like, doesn't. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Doesn't.
Like, even the you said that was All-Star Superman, right? They made All-Star a movie, Superman. All-Star Superman. That was nowhere in it. All-Star Superman, the movie, yeah, the animated movie, was about, like, him dying. And then
yeah, that too. There's another other, because there was more parts to it. But they, of course, the movie went and did that instead. But that was the main focus of the comic. But, like, before that, they would just show little short stories of him doing that. There's another one where a little girl was kidnapped by this guy in the neighborhood, and he had her trapped in the basement. And she was praying for Superman to show up or hear her. Like, I know you have super hearing, Superman, but if you can hear me, please save me. And he shows up and he stops the guy and brings the little girl. And we, mind you, for the whole entire time, we see it from the little girl's perspective. Or there's another one where he, I don't think it's in also Superman, but it's a different comic where the whole plot was not even, again, it wasn't even a villain. There was one where he was trying to save a dying planet because it had it looked like it was going to have a giant climate cataclysm that would end the planet itself, and the whole goal was to save as many people as he can. How can he figure out a way to save as many lives as he can? And also he's having this inner turmoil because he remembers that his home planet Krypton was destroyed by a cataclysm that his father warned them all, and they were all gone. So he's having that battle with it as well, and trying to convince these people, like, please come with me, I can save all of you. At stuff like that, those stories right there, I'm like, yes, pinnacle Superman, please do that, adapt that.
You see, like, if I was seeing that, there would never be a point where I'm anti, like, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And you know what's the saddest part of all this? The little girl story that you told about the little girl on the building and she wants to jump off, right? Mm-hmm. I've never seen an animated or live action version of Superman doing anything like that, but I did see that for Batman, mm-hmm, where in Justice League, there's a little girl and she has powers and they're going out of control. And Cadmus, I think it's Amanda Waller or whatever, allows Batman to go in, and they send Batman to go in to stop her. So when Batman goes in, he literally, she allows him in, by the way, because it's like a cloud of debris and psychic energy, and she allows him in, and then she's sitting on a swing set, he sits next to her, and he just talks with her, and she's like, you know, I read your mind when you came in here, I know that you're not, I know that you
You're not going to kill me.
You're not going to kill me, right? You're not going to kill me. And he was like, I'm not. I don't care what they say. And she was just talking about how much pain that she's in, that she just wants it to stop. And then Batman did it. And Batman was like, yeah, I understand. And it was an emotional moment. And I never saw Batman like that up until that point. But having like that kind of thing, Superman desperately needs that. And that's, I hope that in this new direction DC's going in, we're going to see that.
Which, since we're bringing that up, which is, I think, one of my only criticism of the Batman, Matt Reeves Batman, was that at the end of it, when Batman was giving his little speech and he talked about, I need to be a symbol of hope, I was just like, that's Superman's thing. No, Batman. Batman, what are you doing? Vengeance. You said, no, your whole motto is vengeance. I am the knight. Where did you decide to become a symbol of hope? Not saying he can't be, but I'm like, you just stole, he copied, like, you know how Soulja Boy said, he copied this whole flow. I'll be pissed off with Superman. Like, what? Hope? You wearing all black as a bat in the middle of the night beating people up? You're the symbol of hope. Okay.
But you know what? Like, that's what I loved about the Matt Reeves version. I love the
suit. It's still great. It's still a great speech. I will give him that. I was just like,
yeah, and that was what made the movie better than any Batman movie to me, because it was a shift. Like, Batman just had to, he had to understand that the terrorists were saying, like, hey, you know, I am vengeance, as well, because they were inspired by him, and he had to understand, to actually save the city, he had to change his philosophy of how he's dealing with crime, right? But yeah, man, the way you describe Superman moved me. Like, I want that so bad.
Yeah, he's definitely there. The closest that we can possibly like try to compare it is probably Tyler Hoechlin's Superman and Superman and Lois. Granted, I have not seen the whole thing. It's also a CW show. If you guys like have your reservations for the people who watch it, like about watching Arrowverse style content, but it's not specifically like that. It focuses a lot more on the troubles that Superman has, like trying to hone with his, like how to convey his powers, how to help his family members, the troubles that he has with Lois Lane, because obviously being with a superhero in terms of like having a relationship leads to its own host of problems. So like that's why these new representations of Superman are so important, because he is the archetype for all superheroes, right? Just like, for example, in anime we have Sun Wukong, which like his archetype is the inspiration, at least in general, for Naruto, Goku, whatever. Like, you have all of these characters that stem off of one, right? Superman is meant to be hope for the people reading that there can be a better tomorrow. That's why they changed this motto. They changed this motto. Like, it was always truth, justice, and the American way. As time has passed, obviously, Superman has taken on different meanings, right, to so many different people around the globe. And he's truth, justice, and the fight for a better tomorrow. That is that's what he's supposed to be, right? He's supposed to be a symbol for hope.
Which is also, because there's like, I think there was also, I don't know if it was in one of the animated movies where he even renounced his United States citizenship as Superman. And of course, mm-hmm. not Clark Kent, but when he was in Superman, he renounced his United States citizenship so he can be a representative of the world, wow. not just one country. He's like, yeah, I save everyone. I don't care. I have no allegiances to no nation. I save everyone. You're not going to tell me where I can and can't go to save people. Like, saving people is not political. So
beautifully said.
Oof, what a quote.
That was a bar.
That's a bar. That's a clip right there. That's a clip right there.
That's a clip right there.
With that said, I think we can move on to the clip of the night. The most important discussion of the night, people. We are ending the podcast in the best way possible. We have a question, okay? Everybody knows some people have hot takes. We are the kings of hot takes right now. So we've decided to end the podcast with a top five list of all fictional characters, how they resonated with you, whether they be movies, anime, TVs, video games, anything. These characters have an impact on who we are as people, right? Some people love Superman because it gives them hope on how to move forward, right? There's other people that enjoy more edgier characters, right?
that have a different meaning when it comes to dealing with tough situations or when life knocks you down. So the rules are simple. 5 characters in order, and just give us a brief explanation of why, what they mean to you and why they're in your top 5. So should we leave it up to the wheel like we lived last time?
I think we should.
Okay. Oh, okay. Good. Okay. We did that last time. So if you're new to the We Weekly show, essentially we have a random name picker, choose between us three, and who is going to be, you know, give their opinions first. So let's do Mizu. Let's add Travis. And then let's add me. Let's roll this right now. The wheel is spinning. Let's see who goes first. The first person to give us their top 5 will be our boy Mizu Shogun.
Wow. I had a feeling it was going to be me.
Yeah.
It was going to be me.
You had a feeling? Hey, that's going to be, that's part of it. That's part of it. You got to be ready.
All right. All right.
Second up is going to be our boy Travis, and then I will end. Okay, so Mizu, quickly, give us your top 5 fictional characters and why they are in that spot.
All right, so I'm going to start this off. My list is interesting, I will say the least. So at number 5, I got Yusuke Urameshi from Yu Yu Hakusho. My man is hilarious. I love how he has the charisma, he has the tenacity, he is able to bring people together. And on top of that, the man talks a lot of smack. He talks so much smack that I would even say that I can see him getting in a verbal sparring match with Deadpool. And I'm not gonna lie, it to me is up in the air, because Yusuke really does not hold back with what he says. And it's freaking hilarious. And man had the coldest fits every time he walked around. Number 4, a little random, Sly Cooper from the Sly Cooper series.
Ooh, deep cut.
Interesting.
Sly Cooper is the smoothest anthropomorphic raccoon I've ever seen in my life. And one of my favorite games, he is a thief, but he's an honorable thief. He's a thief who steals from other thieves to show how skilled he is as a thief. And he has a great crew. He is very, like I said, he's very smooth. He's very charismatic. And it's like you can't hate him. If you ever played the games, like, I never met a person who said that, oh, I don't like Sly Cooper. I don't like him. I don't really mess with him. Like, no, he is an amazing character. Number 3 might get some anime fans a little upset is Deku. Deku from My Hero Academia.
Ooh, okay.
You see, a lot of people talk too much smack about Deku. And Deku, to me, is such a great main character for the simple fact that, unlike other shonen MCs that we have seen, he's sensitive. He's not afraid to show his emotions more regularly, because oftentimes shonen MCs will only show their emotion with specific moments. While Deku has always been an emotional kid, and another thing I like about him is that we truly see him develop. They all say MCU character, not MCU, but shonen MCs develop, but oftentimes they only develop in strength. And yeah, they do develop in character, but we don't really see a lot of that transition. We're seeing that with Deku. Deku, from when he was just a weakling, kid couldn't even do nothing, to what he is now, and then what he is now currently in the manga, it's a fantastic development. I would say it's one of the best character development in shonen. Number 2, we got a Marvel character, and that is T'Challa. T'Challa from Marvel. T'Challa is an amazing character. He was one of my first superheroes that I loved. It was him, Iron Man, and Superman. But T'Challa stood out to me to most. And he was incredibly intelligent. And he always had a plan. He was pretty much Batman of Marvel. I know people will say Moon Knight is, but, like, no, I would still say T'Challa, because man has a million backup plans. And he just never seems to lose. And then number 1 is very interesting, and that is, for my anime fans out there, is Lelouch Lamprous from Code Geass.
Okay.
Man, is now I know what you're thinking. Yes, this is a morally gray-ass character. This man has done some very questionable things. But I don't know, something about him intrigued me. The fact that he was trying to topple a government, an evil government that he saw that harmed him both, him personally, and what he's seen, what it's done to others. But then it also begs the question of what would you do? What stakes and what paths would you go to stop an evil government? And how far would you become the monster yourself? And or were you able to recognize those kind of things? And I like the development we get with Lelouch and see him go through that, make these very interesting and very crazy decisions. And unlike my friend Light Yagami, who gets consumed by it, he doesn't. He realizes what's going on. He's like, no, I almost my mirror almost cracked, but I'm going to fix it. And at the end, one of the best endings for a main character, one of the best send-outs for a character in the series. I don't count the movie, but overall, he is such a very interesting main character, and he's my number one, and that is my top five.
That
All
was a
right.
solid top five. We got hot takes everywhere. Not super hot takes, but we got good takes everywhere. Okay,
Yeah.
Travis.
No, those are good hot takes. I mean, those are good takes in general. All right. So this is just from def yeah, this is my five. For my number five, I'm gonna go with Tanya from Tanya the Saga of Evil. So for anyone not familiar with that, it's an anime that is about this working man who's like in his 30s. He gets murdered by someone that he has let go from their job because that's his profession, just letting go people. So they end up getting mad while he's standing by waiting for a train. They go behind him, push him into the train tracks, and then he's about to get hit by that train. But right before he does it, right before he gets hit, he has a conversation with God and he flame broils God. He tells God that he doesn't exist, that he's the way that he's functioning is stupid, and that that's the reason why he can't even acknowledge that this God is real, and in out of spite and to actually break the will of this guy. This god called Being X is decides to reincarnate him into a small child that's like around 7 or 8, and then tells him, hey, once I reincarnate you, if you die again, I will not reintroduce you into the wheel of life, to try and force him to believe in him. And that guy's like, no, F you, I'm going to survive. And as a child, as a little girl, he ends up climbing the ranks of the army and becoming like this crazy military officer. And so to me, this anime was just incredible, specifically because of Tanya. And it answers that question, what is a god to a non-believer who doesn't believe in? And I'm obsessed with it. I love the philosophy of it. That character is so enthralling and well done. The philosophy about believing in a higher power that is a higher power over a chaotic world, so you just invalidate them, is so interesting to me. So number four on my list would be Piccolo from Dragon Ball Z.
Nice.
Yeah. Listen, Dragon Ball Z, regardless if you don't like the fandom, regardless if you think that it's just fights or animation or whatever, Piccolo is one of the greatest characters in fiction and meant a lot to me growing up, specifically because he showed me what it meant to be. He was one of the characters that showed me what it meant for a person to actually change, even though they've done despicable things. Piccolo went from being King Piccolo trying to murder Goku to then being Piccolo saving Goku's child and even helping raise him as his own, even to go as far as helping train and raise his granddaughter when Gohan is too busy with academics, right? Like to see that kind of shift at the age that I did, it was remarkable for me because at that time I saw the world as very black and white, and seeing an evil person being able to change my worldview. Well, he was one of the characters that helped with this. I'm going to talk about the other character earlier later in this list. The third is Batman.
Yeah.
Listen, I love Batman. I love
Man.
Batman. And the thing that I love the most about Batman is that he is a villain. He is a villain. And he is. Yep, hot take. It
It's
doesn't
me.
matter.
The problem is me.
The problem is him. And that's why Matt Reeves' interpretation of the Batman and Batman Under the Red Hood are my favorite Batman movies to date, because they really highlight this. In the beginning of the Matt Reeves Batman film, Batman is riding on a motorcycle and saying that the way that he's handling crime is not helping crime. He knows it, but he's doing it anyway. And when it comes to Batman Under the Red Hood, the Red Hood is a Robin. And the only reason this Robin turned into the Red Hood was to get Batman's love, to be chosen over the Joker. And it's because internally the Red Hood can't understand why the Batman is allowing the Joker to just run wild and kill not just anybody, but friends. Cripple, maim friends. And he for once wanted his dad pretty much to choose him over this villain, and to see the Batman look at him and be like, I can't, sorry. It's like, oh, you're so, wow. This is so good. This is such good writing. You're so messed up. I love it. For number two, I'd have to go with Rock Lee. Rock Lee, again, it's the impact that he had on me when I was a kid. There wasn't a lot of representation on TV when I was a kid, and there were definitely not a lot of characters that I could resonate with or see myself in, but Rock Lee was definitely one of them. Probably the only one at that time, truly, because I have bushy eyebrows, he had bushy eyebrows, and he had a more optimistic personality. I have a picture of him in my room with a thumbs up. Like, he was always this optimistic character, even though he wasn't as quote-unquote talented or skilled as his peers. But despite not having that talent, through specifically just hard work, he was able to hurt one of the most, at that time, threatening and dangerous kids that were a part of the tuning exams. And that always resonated with me. He's the reason I even started Taekwondo and started like practicing in martial arts altogether. So Rock Lee, definitely big ups to him as my number two. And for number one, it's gotta be Vegeta. It's gotta
nice.
Be
Vegeta.
And it's for a similar reason for Piccolo. At the time, he was one of the very few characters I've ever seen go from evil to good, from doing like despicable things, from enjoying conquering planets, murdering dozens, hundreds, millions of people, to then giving his life to save his planet, to protect his family that he created on that planet, and for Goku, a man he's been trying to murder. To see that kind of arc blew my mind. So yeah, that's my list.
Damn, those are two hardcore lists. Jesus. Okay. I think I have mine. So you guys know me. I'm big into all different types of media, so I have a varied... a wide array of people. Okay, so number five, this is a tough list. I'm gonna give my honorable mention first.
Okay.
Honorable mention. He didn't make this list, but damn it, he should have been there. Aang from Avatar The Last Airbender.
That's a good one.
He is the symbol of embracing your destiny, responsibility, not fearing your fate, and actually embracing it and changing the way that people look at their purpose in life. He is meant to follow a certain path. He's meant to deal with the Fire Lord in one way, and he changes everything at every point, even through all the turmoil and craziness in his life as the Avatar. And even facing the truth that he could be disconnected from all of his past incarnations, he still fights and he still goes through the end. So he's the honorable mentions. That's how you know how this list is going to go. Number five is Miles Morales as Spider-Man. Hey. Again, there are no words that can describe what Spider-Man meant to me as a kid. Just the aspect of Peter Parker himself. Then Miguel O'Hara, obviously seeing the fight with your darker side and Venom. As soon as Miles Morales came into the scene, it changed everything. Seeing another a fellow Puerto Rican there, a New Yorican, the fact that he's able to represent two different, like represent African Americans and Latinos at the same time, and show the duality between ethnicity and culture, and also be unapologetic about where he comes from, embracing both sides, and also being an icon right now, to the point that he has movies, TV show, not TV shows, movies, and then you have trading card games. He is video games. He is my hope for a better tomorrow in terms of representation, and I can't wait to see him in Into the Spider-Verse and across the Spider-Verse. At number four, I have Percy Jackson. At number four, I have Percy Jackson. To this day, even though I love Harry Potter and I love what he did for me at the time, I was reading Percy Jackson at a time in my life where I was obsessed with ancient history. And it scratched the itch in a way that I couldn't even believe I couldn't even start to explain how much Percy Jackson does embody the concept of responsibility, honor, respect, fear, failure, friendship. Everything that happens in his life as a kid, then to become a teenager, and then to the expanded universe that he's created. There's over 20 books. There's a TV show adaptation. There's movies coming out. Percy Jackson is getting the just due that he deserves, and he had to be on this list. I couldn't make this list without Percy Jackson. At number three, my favorite anime character at number three, Son Gohan. Son Gohan is my favorite anime character. Although there are more fleshed out characters afterwards and before, obviously they did him dirty in Super. I'm not gonna deny they did him dirty. But even with this new film, Gohan has always resembled the fact of perseverance. He's always been perseverance to me, especially during that fight and his iconic moment with Cell, where he's able to let go of his fears, his desire to protect everybody, and then just be the man that he's always meant to be. This is a character that most people hated throughout his first stage in life because he was so whiny. He was always fearful. He never stepped up to the plate. Every time that he succeeded was by accident. And then to see him grow up to be the most powerful being in his universe, to the point that his own father is willing to give the biggest threat to the galaxy a fresh start in order to see his son become the menace that he knows he can be, is everything that I needed as a character. And the way that he does it unapologetically gives me chills to this day. So Gohan is in my top three. At number two, another symbol of perseverance, but a way darker one at that, I have the God of War himself, Kratos. I have the god of boy. The reason that I decided to go bald was to embrace this man.
Wait, can I just say that?
Yes.
I had a bet that you were gonna have Percy Jackson on there and Kratos.
Okay, bet money on it. You should have bet money on it, bro. Because he is in there. He is in there. Kratos, again, similar to Vegeta, is a man that has done heinous, vile crimes against his own family members, his extended family, the world itself. He is a man that is willing to set the world ablaze in order to prove a point or show his spite, and then to come back in his reboot and care so much, so deeply about his new son, and honoring the memory of his late wife, renouncing not only his stature as a god, but his old violent ways, to restrain himself to the point that he can no longer use that Spartan rage that propelled him to be the most powerful being in Olympus, to be like, no, we have to be better. That's the best quote from that freaking game, is we must be better. We are breaking the cycle of sons killing fathers and fathers killing sons. So Kratos is that guy for me. And the new game is coming out next week. We're going to talk about that when it comes, because holy shit, I'm going to be playing every single second. But at number one, I had to think about this hard, but I think to this day, if I had to think of a character that embodies everything, that feeling of hope, that feeling of becoming who you're meant to be, and embracing who you are, it's Luke Skywalker from Star Wars. Luke Skywalker is definitely that guy. To this day, I can still picture the first time that I saw Luke Skywalker looking at the binary sunset, dreaming of an escape, of a better future, of adventure, right? And seeing him go through losing his mentor, losing his friends, finding out that the person he's trying to defeat is his own father. All of that stuff translates to everybody. Everybody can feel that level of despair, that level of hopelessness, and to see him come back and become the most powerful Jedi really spoke to me in words that I will never be able to thank George Lucas enough for bringing that man into existence. But that is my top five. I think we had a solid list of people. Holy damn. Those are some great characters.
Yes. I love your list. Oh, could I add one more thing?
Yes, give your honorable mention.
No, it's not even honorable mention. I wanted to just further reiterate why Vegeta is my number one over everyone.
Go.
And it's one thing. When he gave his life fighting Majin Buu, right before he did it, he had a conversation with Piccolo, which is one of my favorite speeches in anime, where he asks Piccolo, will I see Goku in the other world? And Piccolo tells him straight out that you're not going to be able to, because Goku spent his life protecting people and you caused too much pain, too much evil. And Vegeta was like, that'll be all. Carry on then. So the fact that he was going to give his life, knowing that he'd go to hell, there's no benefit for him, and he would potentially be like in a torturous place forever, and that he was giving his life in hopes of protecting that planet, Goku family. It was such a level of selflessness that I could never imagine someone so evil doing. And yeah, that's what rewired how I could see evil people when I was younger. So yeah, just wanted to say that.
It's even amazing, because in the manga, the Dragon Ball Super manga, is that in one of the stories we go back to New Namek during the Moro arc, and Moro is attacking Namekians and stuff like that, and Vegeta shows up and he protects them, because you gotta remember, early in the series, Vegeta did some vile things to the Namekians.
Yeah.
In search for the Dragon Balls. And he remembers that, and he is remorseful for that. So when Moro is attacking, every time Moro is trying to kill a Namekian, he comes out of there and stops him. And he's like, why are you so adamant of protecting him? He's just like, because I have to basically repent for what I've done to these people. And so I would do anything at all costs to protect all these Namekians. And I was like, man, the growth.
I feel that. Hey, that was I feel like that list encapsulates what we all love about pop culture, right? The idea that these characters can mean so much and change our worldview to the point that we all feel that we have different perspectives on life because they came into ours, right? So thank you guys so much for an amazing conversation. I think we covered pretty much everything for this week. Again, if you're watching us, make sure to check us out on the Weeb Weekly, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on Instagram, or wherever you consume your podcast, Spotify, Apple Music. Go follow us, share the love, and let us know what is your top five for fictional characters of all time. Also, a big thank you to you guys, Travis, Mizu, for helping us on this journey. Again, let people know where they can find you.
Yeah, guys, you can find me at Travis the Sibling on TikTok and Instagram, and Trav the Sib on Twitter.
You guys can find me as Mizu Shogun on all platforms, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, everywhere.
Right, and you can find me at I'm Tropical Joe everywhere that you decide to consume your content, and I have Tropical Joe and Tropical Joe Gaming on YouTube for obvious reasons. With that said, thank you guys so much for an amazing conversation. And as always, remember, this podcast has been presented by Bet Online. Have an amazing day. We will see you on the next one.